Is this thing on? Okay, good. Hi, this is Dale. You may know me from Right On Nerds on TikTok and other social media, but for now, it's just Dale. And I'm coming to you as a creator, content creator, and as a storyteller. Right now, you're listening to a podcast that used to be kind of the compendium of every project that I had on my brain, and I didn't really like that. So instead, I'm switching gears. You're listening to Eshelbel Tolls. Now, this is the landing grounds for my TTRPG engine, the thing that I'm building and that I started building back in COVID. A lot of us experienced some major upheaval during that time, joblessness and trying to work on your family and figure out how to even go get groceries became a chore, doubly so. And as a working dad, I completely related to all of that, but I really wanted to figure out what I wanted to do once the pandemic was over with. And I found that pursuing one of my passions, which is storytelling, provided that framework to not just keep me grounded and sane during that isolation period, but also helped me to connect with people in a different way. So I'm planning on sharing my techniques, and these updates, you could call them, here on the podcast, are going to inform you about what is happening on this engine. Now, before we get started, you're going to hear a big old story. You're going to hear it's very similar to what other channels and content creators have done in the past, right? They sit around a table, they play Dungeons and Dragons, they play Pathfinder, they stream, they do all these different things. My game is different. I'm planning on sharing the beta notes because this engine is still in production. This first episode features the very first, one of the very first bits of story content chronologically within this world that me and my friends, my supporters, have helped me with. And chronologically, this is the very first interaction that we get with these characters, even though in time of recording, this happened probably months after we had been in our playtesting. Now, I called this Hidden Origins. It's pretty self-explanatory. I want you to listen in for a few things. You're going to be hearing a few different terms thrown around. These are the base stats that you will use in playing the game of Aeternal. The Aeternal Storytelling Engine. That is what we are honing right now. As you listen, you will hear myself, Dale, you will hear, wow, you will hear Memo, who is portraying the character of Jericho. You will also hear Kim, you will also hear me refer to her as Hobbit. She is portraying Ophelia Barkhollow. Now, as we get into this, you may wonder, like, what do these guys look like? And it's true that we hadn't really covered that in this episode, so I'll give you a little brief synopsis. And these characters will actually describe themselves, and these players will describe their characters in context of the story, but so you're aware a little bit earlier on. Jericho is a human. He wears a loose-fitting gi, and he has been trained in a monastery in the ways of the demigod. Oh shoot, I have like five demigods on my brain that just jumped into my subconscious and they're like, no, I don't want to talk about this right now. Great. Right. This is great. Cut with your pants down. That's fantastic. That would be Mahjong. Mahjong is going to be thrown around a lot this episode because of the nature of who Jericho is and his relationship to this demigod. Now, this monastic practice of following Mahjong means that you pursue the value of indomitability, indomitable will. And so his martial arts style reflects that. On the side of Hobbit, of Kim, her character Ophelia is technically a halfling, but I changed the terminology in this game so that it reflects more of a wee folk. And there's two kinds of wee folk. We will explain that as we get further into the story. But for now, be listening out for those two characters. Be listening out for the following. No, actually. Let's start off with that. You'll also notice that there are some terms that will change over the course of the game. And this is because we are working with pre-beta information. So this first episode that you're going to hear has a lot of terminology that's shifting by the time that we actually get into the current, the modern day, like today kind of a thing for me as I'm recording this. It reflects different terminology to help people understand the concepts better. So as you're going through, you're going to listen to this, you're going to see the concepts, you'll see combat. We've eliminated two dice rolls per round of combat. I wanted to make sure that combat was fast-paced so that people weren't bored, but that it also provided some strategic and creative freedom to be able to do what you would like to do and to challenge you to get to know your character's capacities over time. So without any further ado, there's been a lot of preamble. I will shut my face hole before I bring you into the incredible world of Eshelbel. Enjoy.
Welcome to Eschelbell. You're about to hear a story written as the cast discovers it themselves. You'll soar over the Halford Mountains, the famed reserves at Brule, and the remains of the Wishara buried in burning sand. When you visit this podcast, you step foot into an entirely new world. This is a world of magic and science, war and peace, intrigue and crusades. Part game, part hangout, part epic story. This is the sound of Eschelbell Tolls.
Memo, you recall having met a dignitary from the Elven Courts.
Yes.
Now that is something that's been quite some time since we've discussed. So why don't you share with me Jericho's feelings about that exchange?
When he first met her, he had the proper composure as someone of his station should be regarding to someone of her station. Mm-hmm. He kind of mentally anguished at the fact that he had to do this. He doesn't like it. He likes more personable conversation, but he also has an understanding that with his position comes responsibilities, and especially two people of quote-unquote power exchanging words, there are some unwritten rules, some edicts that have to be met.
I think that's right.
And then when she showed up in his quarters, he was first polite, as always, but then she got more personable, and she said something that got him really excited, but then, you know, caught himself and was like, yes, ma'am. You know, all the fun stuff.
Right. Okay. If you could synthesize what Jericho heard from her, what he took away from that conversation, what was it that he was most excited about?
Oh, I can't remember, because we did not get far into that conversation.
You're right. I think that's where we might begin.
Mm-hmm.
So let's set the scene for you guys. Rather than the mountainous regions surrounding Brule and the harsh shale stone buildings and fortresses therein, we jump back to a different region, a familiar region to you, one that is worlds away, it seems, from Brule and its workings and its politics. You're celebrating the homecoming. In the Halford Mountains, we have the Three Sisters Lakes. It is a sacred place and a sacred rite to be able to return to those lakes. And part of the mythology goes that there are these three lakes that are each associated with a different deity of your monastery. In one, in the center lake, there is a stalwart, powerful, stony island. And yet on its back, there seems to be trees and vegetation, brush, grass, and even sand on one of the banks. It is quite the swim through glacial water to get to that island. And only those that are called upon to serve as the avatar for the deity of Earth are permitted to enter full body. Anyone else can drink from these lakes as a gesture of, I'm taking the principle, the power of this deity into myself, into my being. That is as sacred as is the trip back home, this homecoming that you are now hosting at the monastery. And the same goes for each of the three lakes. The Lake of Earth is in the center. The Lake of Air is to the left, the one closest to the mountains north. The one on the far right is of fire. Excuse me, water. I was thinking about your dragon. Nope, it's definitely water. With water, though, it is a crystal lake surface. It is a reflective place, because when you look at this lake, you see the mountains surrounding it
inverted. And though you may take in the water of this lake, again, as a symbolic gesture, this lake is unique in that you don't necessarily enter it. No one really knows what it's like to be an emissary, to be a vessel of the goddess of water. The god of wind, however, people know legends. And the last time that the vessel of Mahegemet was selected, that vessel was taken up by a windstorm so powerful that in the same way that someone would swim across the lake and stand upon the island of the god of earth, the vessel of Mahegemet would sprint across the water. All these images, all these tales are filling your mind at this moment, not just of homecoming, but of the lore, of the sacred history of these three lakes as people are preparing to return to their shores, to take in that essence of these gods, that sacred rite. You are probably hosting 2, 3, 4 dozen families in the monastery alone. And many of the families that live there do not occupy the entire space because many times they will end up moving up to the lake as they get older in years. The younger generations will then disperse out and continue to minister privately, but return home as almost a family reunion, a familial return. You are walking around your monastery. It is a square-shaped monastery. It's actually positioned kind of like a diamond, so the four corners point north, south, east, and west. They are made from iron-rich stone. People of this region might not understand that, but we can picture layers of reds and oranges and browns in the stone. It is very beautiful, and it's striking against the white snow that is beginning to fall and blanket the town. It's high enough elevation that even in the summertime, this is an area that will get snow as its main form of precipitation. The moon is obscured by clouds. The clouds look gray in the darkness, but they do not look threatening or angry. It's a gentle snowfall. You are walking through some of the open courtyards that have coverings and wood-posted canopies over the top of the walkways, even underneath the ballasts and underneath the walls themselves, the walking paths there. They extend further out towards the center courtyard with these canopies. You are pacing the way on your way back out to see if you can find your father, to see if you can offer an assist, when this dignitary of the elven court stands about midway up the next length of pathway for you. You round the corner to your right. That is the last step towards the exit of this place. And there she is, halfway up the hall. Looking on her, her hair is long. It goes probably below, probably about mid-thigh, actually, back behind her back. It is a rich brown. Her lips are a deep red, her skin is very fair, and her eyes are a vivid hazel green. It's almost like looking into lightning striking an angry sea. And this dignitary is looking right at you, Jericho.
Hello, my lady.
And he would offer a proper bow.
She inclines the head in respect and acknowledgement.
Do you find yourself in need of anything? It would be my honor to escort you where you must go.
She's taking you in. She looks down at your feet and scans up to your eyes again. I want you to make me either a mind or a soul roll of any kind to discern what she is thinking without appraisal.
8.
What was the modifier you chose?
Instinct.
Instinct is a surface value mental attribute. So you are seeing what's happening on the surface. You can tell that she is focused. She's curious. The look in her eye is one of stern curiosity. And that within that, there might even be a bit of worry. She straightens, takes a breath.
It is of my best opinion that we must speak briefly and return you to your tasks at hand.
She doesn't wait for a response before she goes into a conversation, a one-sided conversation with you. She turns and speaks and does not beckon for you to follow, but is still speaking. It's one of those weird things like she expects you to follow.
Jericho would follow suit, a few paces behind her, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Not in line with her, not in front of her, behind her.
You get a few spaces behind her and you realize you can't trace directly behind because her train, the train of her dress, goes back about 6 feet. And using your instinct roll again, I would say that the way her body language is, she's glancing over her shoulder and she's gesturing with her hands for you to come forward, to be at her side, not behind her.
There is a small skip in his step. It's like a small pause. He definitely was not expecting this, but he obliges quickly after.
Mm-hmm. You are the son of Cairo, the great monk of this monastery, no?
Yes, Your Honor, Your Grace. He is quite the interesting man, but I am proud to be called his son.
She smiles at that. You, your family are human?
For the larger part, yes. I believe there was some talk from my mother years ago that my great-great-grandfather was some heroic other race, but between you and me, I think she was just saying that to entertain me as a kid.
Do you know your last name?
My apologies, my grace. No. I do not.
She nods at this.
Your ancestors helped to settle this place. And in truth, it was very much the assistance of the Barkalo family that allowed you to survive here. They were those that settled in their small little cabin. Who do you think it was that sent your ancestors here?
Would that be your people, my grace?
She smiles deeply this time.
It was my mother.
Your mother?
Nearly 2,000 years ago. Your people and mine intertwined in friendship. And only because of this, she kind of sighs a minute, only because of this war at hand have our peoples been separated.
Jericho's brows would kind of furrow out the statement.
This war is a terrible thing, my lady. Even I, as mortal as I am, can understand its implications will be far-reaching, well, after all of us have laid rest.
There is... Actually, Ophelia, let me pick your brain. From what you recall of our discussions, our session zeros, our notes, what do you recall from how many generations have been at the Bark Hollow Brewery? I think it was 500 years or so that it's been 500 or so that these people, the family has existed and that the tree has been growing.
That sounds about right.
Okay. So now you guys understand that there has been an extended timeline of the interactions between this queen, her family line, and the family line of Jericho's. She's still walking through this monastery.
It was when our families met that we grew quite close. But with wars come and gone, we have lost contact. This is not just a homecoming for your people. In many ways, it is a homecoming for mine.
And she will stop and face you directly.
Do you know your family name?
I Would it be related to yours, my lady? That is the only lead I can gather from all of this.
She smiles. I apologize for the vague nature. Family names are sacred for us. It is why we only speak them when we offer ourselves in marriage. And for this reason, I would invite you to simply ponder how you are connected to the forces and perhaps the families that extend far beyond you.
And with that, she waits for no further word and will, at this point, she's walked you essentially to the front doors of the fortress of the monastery. These walls are maybe 20 feet at their highest, and that's only because they are perfectly flat. And at the 20-foot mark, they are the furthest away from the mountainside. Once you get up to the mountain, it pretty much goes flush. You can walk from the tops of the walls up the mountainside. But she's completed her say, and she's been appraising you, trying to see what she could glean from you and offer this counsel. What's going through your head as she is looking and appraising you once more?
The prevailing thought in his mind for a good brief of that moment is just thinking, is she one of my ancestors? But his mind definitely sharpens at those final words. He can only think about what does the future have to hold? Am I the vestige of Mehejimit? Will I be his inheritor? All the signs say yes, but there is some doubt in his mind, needless to say.
She will continue appraising you until your eyes meet, and she'll cock her head to the side and she'll sigh.
The vestige of Mehejimit is a duty and inheritance that is quite complicated, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it truly is quite terrifying from what accounts I can understand.
And just so we are clear, I am technically more of your half-sister, if anything.
She shrugs.
Fascinating.
Of course, it is many, 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 many times removed, but yes, half-sister.
Well, family is still family, is it not?
That caught her off guard. And I'd like for you to mark this woman. When I give you her name, you'll be able to write it down, but I want you to mark a 4 for the social rank.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually 1 above neutral.
Oh?
So you're associates now. You are known associates, and you do have an ally in her. But it is not necessarily like she's going to drop everything to come help you kind of mm-hmm. thing.
Now, so you may call upon me later, should the need arise. Ashaya is my name.
Well met, Sister Ashaya.
She bows her head to you.
I am certain that preparations must be seen to. I will leave you to it.
Thank you very much, my friend. I hope you do enjoy your stay here.
She bows her head again. Mehejimit's blessing upon you.
The blessings of all three guide your path.
People describe models as floating sometimes when they're in dresses, especially wedding dresses. This woman may as well be actually floating. The grace to this woman has absolutely no compare as she walks away up the next length of the inner walking way behind the walls and then rounds the corner without another glance at you. Now, to your right, you see flashes of yellow, orange, green, blue, purple, and then you hear pow, 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 pow. You hear you hear kids, yay, clapping, screaming. A fireworks display has begun in the middle of this gentle snowfall. And you hear a great bustle inside the monastery as families leave the additional dwelling places there and come to the stairs that lead to the upper embankments of the wall of the fortress so they can get the best view possible. You know that these would be firing from the tops of the Bark Hollow Brewery and that they would be firing far off into the descent down the mountain. Now, to that point, there's lots of stone down there, so they're not wantonly shooting fire into a forest. But because this is all stone, essentially, up this high, they are allowing that and using that to the advantage of entertainment and being able to show this great welcome, this lovely gesture to those that have traveled so far to arrive at home. And with that, we're actually going to jump over to the Bark Hollow residence. Now, with everything that we've discussed with your story thus far, Hobbit, where do you recall having left off with Ophelia?
If I recall, we had left off kind of as Ophelia had decided that she's going to do a bit of traveling. She's going to take Coleman with her.
Mm-hmm.
She had packed a bag.
And that was where we left off, I think. You'd met back up with him and he was going back home to pack himself.
Yes, the plan was pack the bag now, take care of the rush that would be happening, that would no doubt be happening for the rest of the day, and then leave in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a few things that are happening. You have been packing, you've been bustling about, you've been waxing, scrubbing floors, you've been making sure shelves are stocked, you've been helping to roll these barrels of some of the best vintage wines and brews that you have had in the building for almost a century now. It's going to be a good night. In fact, your father has asked you specifically to go down to the brewery. It's a separate building, but still within the complex of your family home. The central hexagon to your family estate where the Bark Hollow tree is located. If you go in there from the front entrance and veer to the right, there's different wings. There's wings to every other flat side of this hexagon. So basically three sides of the hexagon have a different wing of the building. And if you go to your right, going in through the front door, go to your right wing, that is where the brewery is located. And you hear the machines kind of cranking. You see oxen and donkeys walking in circles to help propel the vintner machines and the presses, and some of them are, there's even a small young donkey, a young little dude that is just kicking around. He's in training, but he's helping to push the automated bellows that are helping to heat the fires that help purify the mixture that is coming off of some of your wheat-based products. And these are from the mountains. This is the stuff this little donkey is working on. This little agitated, young, restless donkey is going to wind up being some of the best brew that the Bark Hollows can produce. It's their most popular vintage. As you start getting ready for the night, the closer you get to departing this place, have you given much thought as to how you would introduce this to your parents?
Thought about it and still not entirely sure how I'm actually going to go about it, because I have a feeling they're not going to be too happy with me if/when I tell them of my idea.
That's fair. So I'll say that you wind your way through the brewery and you get to the storehouse. And you go and there's a small barrel. This is something that they have reserved for this specific year, this specific occasion. And it is one of the few remaining barrels of this vintage that come from the origins of the Bark Hollow Brewery. And this barrel legitimately is about the size of a flagon. It can't even be said that it is a full barrel. It is tiny. But you can see engraved, branded, there's filigree on this thing that denotes that it has been set apart and specifically for Ashaya. That is the barrel, quote unquote, that you are intended to take to her directly.
Ooh.
So, How do you proceed?
Now, so I'm taking it to her. I'm not waiting for her to come and then give it then.
Oh, no. This is a special delivery of the Bark Hollow Brewery. You know what? Roll me either awareness or smarts. I'll let you pick.
I'm going to go awareness. As I always do, because I have a plus two to that.
There you go. Oh, no.
So I rolled a one.
With that in mind, you look down at this thing and you can't help but wonder, like, this is one of our oldest vintages. Why are we giving into this random dignitary? Now, I'm assuming you would take it. I'm assuming you would walk out with it.
Yeah. I'm being absolutely extremely careful to make sure that I've got a good hold on this thing. Because I know that my dad would kill me if even just the tiniest drop gets spilled.
Right, right. You are walking back to the central hexagon, to that tree. And there's an unease that comes not from any mystical or external means, but just knowing what you experienced with that tree. How do you think Ophelia would feel knowing she's leaving? This tree has been here longer than she has. This has been a staple of her family.
I'm going to stop a moment by the tree and just kind of take a couple of minutes just to kind of sit under it one last time.
In this place, you've always known that whatever happens inside the... whatever happens inside this place, specifically the brewery, but elsewhere, the sound will reverberate into this central atrium. And you're hearing a lot of that coming from the brewery now. There's more and more noise. You know people are filing in. And though there's no breeze, the branches of this tree are swaying as if there was. One of them brushes along the back of your head, comes around your ear, comes around to your cheek, and gently caresses you there.
I just give it a very gentle pat-pat.
That the whole, like, awkward, how do you pat-pat a tree? But you manage it.
Yeah, I'm used to that by now.
I want you to roll me another awareness.
All right. I'm going to use a different die this time.
Yes.
Ooh, much better. That is a 4 plus 2... is 6.
Nice. And you're rolling with D6s, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you definitely sense that with that final caress, and as you give it the pat-pats, you feel something inside your pocket. It's warm, and they wouldn't have the words for this in their world, but it's like a cell phone vibrating in your pocket. A strong, consistent, single shaking. Doesn't make a sound, but you can definitely feel the energy pulsing there.
I jump and quickly check my pocket.
You pull out that ring that Coleman gave you. And as you look at the gem in the center there, you hear the tree rustle. Behind you. The ring pulses in time with the tree.
Well, that's peculiar.
With your 6, you still get... technically, it's kind of a dirty crit, so I want to give you something a little extra. earlier you heard the rustling of these leaves, and you could have sworn that it was words you were hearing. It wasn't just these leaves. You listen again to the sounds of the leaves, and it is drowning out the sound of the kitchens and the pub. As you hear, shh, Ophelia. The ring stops pulsing.
Must be sleep deprived or something. Trees can't talk. Trees cannot talk. That is not a thing. Clearly, I've been working too hard.
It's like, all right, Ophelia. No one is in the room with you, but you have heard a voice as clear as day.
Excuse me, sorry, what?
No response.
And I'm looking around trying to find this person who has spoken because A, I knew I came down here alone, and B, I didn't hear anyone come in.
Do you respond or call out to the tree again?
Yes. If someone's here, could you kindly, show yourself?
Would you stop talking to yourself? All we're doing is wasting more time. Have you got the barrel or what? And you see your cousin, Lorelei, coming around the other side of the tree.
Have you been there this whole time?
Been where? I was trying to tail you over to the brewery, but you seem to have escaped my eye. What's taking you so long? You just decided to have a conversation with a few petals, did you?
I'm just tired. Everything's fine.
You don't look fine. You look like you've been talking to a ghost.
It's just, you know, nerves.
She kind of cocks her jaw to one side. Huh. Well, have you got the barrel or what? We've been waiting on you. Well,
yeah, I got it right here.
You? Good, finally. Let's hit the road. I want to get out of the cold before it gets colder. It's already too cold. Why don't we live in the desert? Come on.
We don't live in the desert because our ancestors saw fit to put a still inside of a hollow tree.
Oh, ancestors, schmancestors, all they do is just give us the grace of life. That's all they've ever done. And I want you to make one more awareness roll.
Alrighty. Ooh. That is a 5 plus 2, 7.
With her word and speaking about ancestors, this is a very good roll, so I'll give you this. The tree has stopped moving altogether. Both of you move forward out of that place, and as you walk, you come to the door, the doorway that leads to the pub, and as you step through, you are hit with a wave of warmth. You are hit with sound of clinking glasses.
Excuse me, pardon me. Look where you're going. Watch it.
All these people are crisscrossing in front of you. There's meals going back and forth. There are trays and even a wagon outside that you can see where stacks and plates and shelves of food are being placed in order to move up the hill to the monastery. And you know that is one of the more important package deliveries of the night because that's where the feast is going to be held. There are many that are staying in the inn, but the majority of the people of significance are being treated at the monastery. So that wagon is heading up that way and you are about to join that same convoy. However, there are a lot of people coming into the brewery. You see elves, you see humans, you even see more halflings, these wee folk that are coming in. And then you spot a human man wearing a white button-up shirt with a blazer and a trench coat. He takes off his hat, his hair is all slicked back. He has kind of a toilet bowl hairdo, but his hair along the edges of his head is super long and it looks like it's always wet. You can't tell from here, but it looks like it's always wet. He has a little bit more sallow face than what you might have remembered him this afternoon. But you know for certain that that is Reginald, the man who tried to demand a room here in the building.
Okay, again.
You see he reaches up to his jaw, and he's rubbing the bone really intensely, and he's moving his jaw around. I want you to roll me any of the mind stats.
Alrighty.
Let me know which one you pick.
I'm good at zero in both, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Still not terrible. That's a four for instinct.
Four. You notice he hasn't been bruised, but it looks like his jaw is disconnected. And ooh. I'm going to roll my own little dice here. Oh, wow. That's apropos. He's scanning the room and he sees you. And he starts.
So I take it things didn't go over so well with Toby.
The room is full of people and there's still a lot of noise. Would you attempt to shout that over the crowd?
No, I'm going to make my way over to him.
I want you to roll movement to see how well you can get through this.
Okay.
I'm kind of picking on you because I know that the stats aren't in your favor in some of these.
Let's see. How do I roll movement?
So
again?
Move stat. The move stat is all you're going to focus on. You'll roll your D6 and then add that on top.
Okay, because all I have marked for is my actual movement speed. So I'll have to fix that later.
Got you. I got you. So in this case, I think that because you were magic, you had the choice of picking either between, I think it was brawn or something else. So I think that your movement might actually be one of your not as good. For now, it's treated as zero mod.
Okay.
And go ahead and roll another D6 for me.
That's a two.
Okay. So you're pushing through the crowd. People are coming and going, but everyone is so much bigger than you as a wee folk. And they are bumping into you, jostling you, and you're almost more concerned about making sure this barrel doesn't just tip out of your hands. People are as accommodating as they can. Excuse me, pardon me, sorry about that. Hey, watch it! All these people are just crossing back and forth. And by the time you get over there, I need you to make another awareness, because he is gone.
All that for nothing. Five.
You smell something acrid as your eye meets the back of his trench coat as he's walking over to the bar. It's not alcohol. It almost smells like when you take out rotten food at the end of the night and you dump it into the compost heap. It smells like those heaps have been sitting for far too long on a hot day. And you know that that smell is trailing him.
Oh, he really had a bad time at Toby's.
Now, at this point, that smell hits Jericho's nose.
Did someone forget to take a shower or something?
There's a few people in the crowd that giggle at that.
Jericho is going to try to look around to see where the smell's coming from.
I'll give you an instinct roll. Mm-hmm. Do so with advantage.
With advantage? Oh, you're being too kind to me now. That is a critical.
Nice. So you see right in front of you this small little wee folk girl. Now, I'm going to give you the chance to describe yourselves to each other. I'm not sure we've actually taken the time to review that in recent games, but I wanted to give you each the chance to describe what you look like.
Ophelia, please go first.
All right, so Ophelia is about 3.5 ish, maybe slightly shorter. Let's say 3.5 on a good day feet. With short brown hair, green eyes. A little bit on the chubby side, sort of currently dressed in a skirt with an apron over it, blouse, not quite a tavern wench attire, but a bit more modest than that.
Sure.
A lot of blues and purples in her color scheme. And currently carrying under one arm a barrel. Or not quite a barrel.
It's all we can really refer to it as. It's just this small little storage container at this point, but
yeah, it's what it aspires to be a barrel.
Yeah. It's like a maximum size flagon, essentially, is what it is. And at that point, I'm almost wondering, I would imagine you would have gathered your winter wear, your cloak, maybe even a hat, but if you don't, it's up to you. What would you say is emblazoned on, what's the design of this particular cloak, if anything?
I would say probably along the hem of it is a field of flowers. And then emblazoned on the back is just a picture of a tree.
Excellent. Now, you... this sight is what meets your eye, Jericho. And you can't help but wonder if that smell is coming from this person for a split second before that crit kicks into effect and you're able to trace that smell across the room. Which... that's when we switch to Ophelia's perspective. Now, what would Ophelia see almost bumping into her walking in the front door?
A lot of just silvery white argent fabric. As someone in the monastery, he is constantly wearing the predominant clothing of the monastery, which is very a loose-fitting gi. Not necessarily like monastic robes, more in a sense of like an old martial arts sense. His is argent white to represent that he is a follower of the teachings of Mahejmet, the acolytes of Mahejmet to be specific. There are different shades of silver and white just to give it some form of texture. But the most defining feature of him is that large dragon tattoo. He is sleeveless on his left hand, and his right hand is a humongous sleeve. But there is a tattoo of a dragon in a more lung dragon style that starts at his neck, snakes down onto his left hand, and stops and doesn't stop until it gets all the way to his right foot.
Where is the head of the dragon relative to his neck?
At the heart. Or no, at the collarbone.
Got it.
So... there's enough of a V-cut that you can see part of the head, but the most predominant way you see the dragon is its main body coming through its left hand.
Love it.
Other than that, pretty typical gi. He has a basic quote-unquote rope for a belt. His pants are tied at the ankle as well.
Love it. Now, I don't know that Ophelia would know this unless she was helping out with farm animals. And I'm not certain that Jericho would know this unless he has seen some combat or at least defending these caravans. Do you think that either of you would recognize the smell of blood?
He would definitely recognize the smell of blood.
I imagine she would as well.
Okay. Alongside that decaying smell, that's what hit you first. Now, I want you... you're going to roll a social roll. This is less about discerning facts and more about understanding behavior. So we're either going to rely on our smarts, our awareness, or our instincts. I'll let you guys pick. Again, you're going to want to be... you'll be tempted to rely on your strengths, specific information about what we are trying to glean here might be from a different stat than what you would typically pick. So keep that in mind as you make your selection on these three stats: smarts, instincts, or awareness.
I'm going to go awareness as usual.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Ooh, I got that crit though.
Hey! So with your awareness is very empathetic. It's tuning in. It's essentially the vibe catcher. And as you smell that blood, you recognize that aversion to you, he is hiding. This is the behavior of a person who is interdicted. This person is trying to get away from a situation and has just stumbled his way into another one and knows nothing else except to flee. And unfortunately for him, he thinks the best spot is behind the bar.
Hey, sir, you kind of go back there.
Now, as we move forward with that, that's great that you say that. We're going to come back to that. Jericho, what was your selection?
He's just trying to get the baseline instincts of this. Is this man going to be a threat to himself, myself, and slash or the patrons of the bar?
Got you. Go.
I accidentally rolled twice, so I'll take the lower one. Yep. That is 5 in total.
He has not passed the vibe check for Ophelia. You sense, based on his behavior, his external behaviors alone. And that's when you see, as people are crisscrossing, there are people that are trailing something dark in their footsteps through the hardwood, on the hardwood of the floor here. And that trail, that dark trail, originates in the path that he walked back behind the bar. Looking closer, with your 5, I will give you one last piece of information with no more context beyond this. That is blood on the backs of his heels and on the front of one of his boots.
Jericho grips his rope dart. He has it hidden on his right sleeve, so it's not in visible daylight or invisible view of anyone else. But he readies it and grips it tightly. He's ready to fling it out at a given moment's notice.
Now, Ophelia, you and this man would have had regular interactions, either in serving the bar, coming to the bar, or in protecting the bar. Sometimes the monks here act as a police force, and rightfully so. People like this Reginald oftentimes might get too rowdy. Even if this is a spiritual place, people that seek spiritual guidance oftentimes are doing things that are not conducive to their life, to their well-being. So there's no other way to go about it if a person's going to come to harm for themselves or others. So I think you would have an implicit trust with someone from the monastery to help you in this situation. How do you guys proceed from here?
Jericho is going to get as close as he can to Reginald. So much so that if he speaks to him, it would largely be kept to him, Reginald, and if anyone else is close in that vicinity, i.e., Ophelia.
Oh no, yeah, Ophelia's going behind the bar.
So you go behind the bar. Do you confront this man directly?
Jericho's going to, definitely.
Yeah, okay. I'm absolutely going to confront
Who initiates this?
Good question.
Well, being that this is my place.
That's great. So you come around the edge of the bar, and I think at this point I'll give you this one. He is digging around your stores behind the bar under the table, like under the countertop. He's digging frantically. Bottles are rolling across the ground. You can tell that he's trying to be careful, but these bottles are clinking to the floor and against each other with some force, and you're worried he's gonna break something. Like, what the freak is this man doing?
Sir, if you break any of this, you're paying for it.
He'll snap back up at you. The jaw he was just massaging has actually started to fall from his face. His eye on that same side is drooping, The eyelid, his top eyelid is almost completely covering his pupil as his lower lid has completely exposed the rest of his eyeball and his skull. He shakes his head vigorously back and forth. He clutches at the sides of his head. He cannot talk as he's gaping without half his jaw. He rolls onto his back, and as he arches his back, hands still at his face, there is a guttural scream that tears through the air, but it stops somehow. It was already frightening before. He was screaming as a man, but the more he screams, it does not stop. The more he screams, it becomes more bestial. And at this point, people are panicking, especially those that are close to the bar. They're like, what is going on? They have no context. Things are going in a bad way. And before you, either of you can react, you see that this man's features have started to elongate, shrink, crack, break. It's carnage incarnate in front of you. You see that his clothing is beginning to tear at awkward angles. Where there should be a shoulder, where there should be like a flat chest, there is an angled arch coming out. His clothing rips, tears, and before long, you see that what was once a man, this man with such vitriol in demanding a room here, has started to shift into something truly grotesque. And by the time it is all said and done, he has shifted into the closest approximation to many of the things in this room. You notice that as horrifying as this is, his skin is stretching and hardening. It is becoming reflective. It is becoming grainy and almost plant-like. And then there's elements of that same plant life that begins to harden and stretch and intertwine into planks of wood. And suddenly you see everything stops and people are calming, but the man is gone. In its place is a wooden chest.
Jericho is going to strike at that chest from a distance with his rope dart.
Make yourself an attack roll. Roll your mastery die, add a modifier, and then add your weapon damage.
Oh, boy. Add it all together?
Yes.
Oh, God, that's a 10.
Okay. You have 5 more than his defense, so that's going to be a very powerful hit on your part. This rope dart hits dead center where the lock would be. And right as it does that, the chest explodes open, revealing rows of serrated 6-inch long teeth and a dripping tongue that is dark purple swinging through the air like a whip. And as you hit it with your rope dart, it flings its tongue out at you in retribution. I need everyone here to roll your drive. Hey, Kim, do you see what I did there?
Yes, I see what you did there, and I absolutely love it.
Did I pull you out of the narrative for a minute?
a little bit. I don't know if you heard me giggling.
Oh, yeah, I did. I was trying my best not to laugh.
That is a flat 3 for me.
3 on drive, okay.
That is a 7 for me.
Excellent.
Because I got a crit.
And your boy Reginald got a 1. So we're going to start off with Ophelia. Ophelia, you have an opportunity to act. You have no weapons on your person. You have only the memory of what happened with that tree, and those memories are being forced into your brain as your pocket is vibrating violently. What do you do?
I'm going to stick my hand in my pocket, put the ring on.
You don't feel any different as you do, but a voice jumps into your head. Hold out your arm.
I hold up my arm.
I want you to pick a modifier, roll, and then add the damage modifier from your ring, or from your stats. Pick a stat, add the damage from the ring, and then roll your dice.
Ooh, that is a 5.
Nice. So we have +2, +5, and then do your awareness for me.
Okay.
So that'll get you
9 total.
Nine total. Okay. Now, with that, let me roll a defense roll here. Nice. You feel, as soon as you have your hand out, nothing happened when you put it on, but once you hold your hand out, that ring vibrates in such a way that it shifts energy throughout your entire body. And with that surge, it's almost like ripples in a pond. It's like this ring emanates waves into your body, and once they reach your extremities, they immediately shoot back out to the ring and your outstretched hand. With your awareness, what kind of imagery would you think comes from this green gemmed ring firing at this monstrosity?
There would be a light that is a very the same sort of mottled green color of the stone.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of takes the shape of vines.
Mm. I love that. So these glowing, vibrant, luminescent vines fire from your fingertips, intertwine, and drive themselves in between the planks of the chest and deep into the gullet of the beast that dwells therein. If this thing had a voice before, it is gurgling now. It cannot speak. It is absolutely on its last legs. You see that whatever was left of Reginald is now violently shaking and trembling, clinging to life. I would say it's now our little monk's turn.
Oh boy. So yeah, no, Jericho wasn't expecting that. But that's not on his mind right now. His mind is completely devoid. Like a gentle fog going through the left side lake. As he moves his joints with such precision, there's a small emanating hum of a glow coming from his left arm, specifically from the tattoos. So he's going to try. He's going to pull his dart back out from the locket where he first struck. And he's going to pull it back and strike back in such a way. He's not trying to pierce the box. He's trying to make the dart go through it.
Ooh. Okay. So I would imagine you're aiming for where the hinge is in the box.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's probably going to be the best spot for you to try to impale it. Let's see how well you roll.
Oh, baby! That is a crit. What in Sick. God's name is going on?
I'm going to roll a defense roll just to see what happens. That is a natural one.
So, that, I mean, in total, that is 11.
Okay, so you have 10 points above his defense. How do you fell the beast?
When the rope dart comes back to me, I imagine he whips it around his body in such a way he can still maneuver it back to these, back kind of pointed in the same way it came.
Mm-hmm.
But what's different this time, it feels like like a pluck of a guitar.
Mm.
It's a sudden acceleration with a gust of wind right behind it.
Oh, I love that. As that wind carries your rope dart, it goes straight to the back of the throat where you might imagine the uvula and any other organism might be, but it cracks through the back of the wood, the back of this thing's body. The tongue that's been lashing around that you now notice has some spines coming off of it. It's like some cats have those spiked tongues, but this thing it has it everywhere on this tongue of his. The tongue is flailing about. People are ducking out of the way, and as it struggles, the tongue stops, lurches, the box twitches. The lid, including the teeth, slam shut over the top of the tongue. The tongue falls limp before it. There's only two or three people in the area here that are cognizant enough to start to applaud. And you know that they are either drunk or just bloodthirsty. They're the kind of people that traveled with you that were always, who wants to arm wrestle? Kind of a thing. Everyone else is staring.
Everyone vacate the premises now. This is now monastery business.
Everyone books it. And everyone's going out. As people are filing out, you hear thump, 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 thump. What's the meaning of this? What's going on? And you realize it's your dad, Ophelia. It's your dad.
Hi, there.
What in the... What's going on here?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you, honestly. Because I don't quite believe what I just saw.
I'm pretty sure you destroyed me, little miss.
I don't believe what I just saw, and I was there.
At this point, Jericho would brandish his necklace, identifying him specifically as the vessel Behezhnet.
I can promise you, sir, the situation is under control.
Right, I can certainly appreciate that, but what the bloody hell?
It seems like one of your patrons was a monster in disguise. Came behind the bar, rustled around a bit.
Patron? What patron?
He looks to Ophelia.
You would have probably not actually heard about
that.
No,
that was me. I was there with you, Ophelia. And your cousin steps up with you and just kind of nudges. Go on, tell him.
So this morning, I got back with the water and everything, and there was a guy here who was kicking up a god-awful fuss about, wanting his room and everything. And
oh, that one.
Yeah,
and that's when he starts to chuckle, and then it dawns on him. Oh, that one.
Yeah, that one. So I sort of kind of told him to take his business up to Toby's.
Toby's. Toby's.
Toby, the guy up the road who's, smells like a barn.
Yes, dear. I know of Toby. He's reeling right now. He searches. His hand is searching out to his side. He finally lands. His hand lands on one of those bar stools, pulls it up and sits on it, leans on it for a minute because it's too tall for someone his size. We've got a giant dead carcass in our kitchen.
You said it came from Toby's?
That's right.
The gentleman was trailing blood when he came in.
Yeah, he came in here looking like he went a couple of rounds with Toby and smelling none too pleasant at all. Then he comes behind the bar. So I went to stop him and...
Excuse me, sir. And at that point, you recognize that gritty voice.
Oh, no.
As Coleman, the scale folk. Coleman, he's a stocky man. He's a little worse for wear. That bright sheen of ruby scales might have been a bit more glinty, pretty earlier in his life, but they're a little dingy, and especially now, they are quite dingy and muddled by blood coming from his collarbone down his left arm. He is leaning on the doorframe using his right arm, and as you take this in, he recognizes that. He looks down, looks back up at you and offers a weak shrug with his good shoulder.
Does it tell you that was kind of not what I was expecting of the old lout?
Never mind that. Are you okay?
Well, of course not, love. I've been chewed on.
And he'll just... He's so warm-spirited most of the time, and I don't think that's lost on you right now. It's just he's in a little bit of shock. He's literally been punctured through dragon scales, through his thick skin, and is now just chilling in a doorway.
I'm going to go over to him and kind of help him into his usual chair.
Sir, what can I help you with?
I need to tell you exactly what's been going on around here. I took the time to go out and go up to the monastery, because there's dignitaries, and I figured I'd introduce myself, show them a good time, show them that we're good folk around here.
And for a fact, I think Ophelia more than most, but you know that Coleman has had a recent loss in his family.
Mm-hmm.
His wife has passed. In fact, the ring that Ophelia is wearing came from him. The man is lonely as all get out, and he is now saying he went up to just welcome these people and show them a good time. You know that he's just trying to find company.
But as I was going up there, I saw these wonderful dignitaries, elven women. Goodness, they are quite fair indeed. Not quite like my special little princess, but Anyway, I was coming back down after I realized this was kind of a fancier event than I should have been at attendance to. And then I was coming down the hill when this blur comes at me. A man was sprouting fangs out of his bloody face. He up and bites me across the chest and tries to claw at me. I kick him. I kick him hard off the chin, and he sprints off towards the bar. I'm sorry I tried to stop him, but he was not within his right mind.
Where did this creature come from? Did you get a good guess at where it was?
He thinks back on it. I'm going to give you a quick roll. That's a crit. His face drops. Oh, stars above. He looks immediately back out the door. He was covered in blood before he met me. Go back to the monastery, now!
Jericho's not gonna wait. Practically with wind carrying him, he is running at full speed back to the monastery.
Ophelia, would you try and keep up?
First, I guess yes. whilst Coleman's been telling the story, I'm gonna be, like, tending to the wound.
It's at this point that you start seeing people, Jericho, you start seeing people on the street looking, stopping on the sides of the street. They are all looking up to the monastery.
As I'm running, I'm going to try to get a good look at the monastery, see what they're looking at.
Roll me any mind stat.
Mind would be driving aware, right?
Mind is your instincts and smarts.
I mean, I guess I'd go with instinct. He's not going to take time to pause and examine it. He's rushing
exactly.
forward.
Exactly.
Seven
total. Okay. As you're doing this, as you're seeing this happening, you are sprinting past people. No one is in your way. You are adept enough to be able to dodge if someone's not paying attention. You are going up. It's not a very far sprint, but the walls look intact. The building itself looks to be intact. There's no burns. There's no damage. But everyone seems to be whispering in groups to each other as they watch. And they are... I wonder, with that high of a roll, it's not... Is that a crit? It's not a crit for you, is it?
No.
Okay.
That was a 4 plus 3.
Okay. Then I would imagine that you don't catch the conversation, and you wouldn't be able to catch the conversation in a dead sprint. But you're going immediately to the building. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, you are sprinting inside and you see larger clusters of people, some of the monks, some families of monks that have lived there. You see some of the visitors clustered together. They are talking amongst themselves. And again, this is a square-shaped fortress. So it has a large central courtyard that is divided in four by almost a cross walkway. Now, in each of those four quadrants, there is a meditation pool, there is sand, there is a sparring ring, and then there is a kind of almost like a hard dirt area where people will sit for lectures. In the dead center of that cross, though, is the largest group of people. And you see the broad shoulders and the specialized robes that denote your father, whose back is to you. He's looking down at the ground in front of him. And from this angle, you cannot ascertain what is down there.
Kaina!
Jericho, come!
And he'll rush right to his father's side.
Your father meets you before you can get to the actual site. I need you to raise the alarm. You will go out of town. You must travel overnight. We need reinforcements from the Royal Guard. Do you understand?
Father, what happened? What is going on? I was attacked at the bar.
There was an assassination attempt.
And he turns to look back at the body, and you see an elven woman propped up with the help of two of the Royal Guard of her company, tending to her wounds using both magic and practical medicine.
Jericho is going to jump over his father, using some of the wind to kind of maneuver around him. He's gonna try to get to the
son! I would imagine you immediately go to her side anyway.
Yeah.
And when you do, she meets your eye tiredly. She sighs with a weak smile.
I suppose this trip was a bit more than I bargained for, no?
What happened, Ashia? What happened?
I am not certain, but...
She looks you in the eye again, as she's been searching for the memory. She searches you now.
There is no way I... Wait.
She holds a hand out to one of the men beside her, and you see her start to gesture her hands in the air. You know that she has been injured. She has some lacerations along her left arm, so she's wincing as she's composing this spell. But you see her create a rune, and then you see her gesture around this rune in midair with her hands. Her fingers flay away from it and then crunch down on it. And from there, she twists her hands as if she's spinning a ball in a circle, and the rune spins vigorously in a circle to the point where it feels like one of those like projection balls where it shows imagery and letters and things like that. It is spinning faster and faster and faster until she collapses. She claps both hands around it in a puff of smoke. When she opens her eyes, they are glowing a verdant teal. And as she looks at you, looks to Cairo, your father, looks to the environment, she points off to the deeper portions of the monastery connected to the mountain itself. That is where he was. The man who attacked me. And you're starting to piece together, this was a rampage. You're not certain if this was a true assassination, but you can recognize that the specific targets that were hit had some political value until someone tried to stop him outside of the monastery, and that was Coleman. But there's someone else that has apparently been potentially inside the monastery proper.
I will go investigate. Stay here and stay safe.
You don't hear a word of confirmation, but you feel your father's presence as the both of you dart inside, him thundering next to you.
Mm-hmm.
The both of you divide and conquer. The door enters into a T intersection, so you go either direction. And you search the library wing, and you're looking around, you see nothing, so you dart back to where your father is. This is the administrative portion of the back end of the monastery, where you have about three offices, and the second one in, your father is standing outside.
There's nothing in the library, nothing in the southern wing.
Son.
Not anything.
Son. You need to brace yourself.
Call me son, Cairo. What's going on?
His head hangs low and he can't even meet your eyes. He steps away and gestures for you to enter.
He's going to give a worried look to his father, then turn back to the door, and he's going to enter.
Well, you know whose office this is. This was the office of the three offices of the three sisters' lakes of the three gods. This was the office of the original vessel of Mahegemet. And all you see is an eviscerated corpse in the center of the room.